Yo, live from the Dream Hotel in Hollywood, Chief Johnson, Malik Rashid, Worldwide Ty, Sweet Life. Yo, man, finally.
I know, right?
Finally.
We in the suite. Yeah. Y'all on brand.
Yeah. Hey, we on brand, right? That's one. We got one. He'll tell you if you're not on brand. Yo, man, what's been going on? Talk to us.
Man,
how you feeling? You just celebrated a birthday?
Yeah. I just turned 39. Ooh. It's interesting. When I was 18, I never thought what 39 would think, would like feel like. I don't think we plan for 30s, right. Like to be alive.
We don't.
Know what I'm saying?
Wow, that's...
It puts our, the way we even think about life and like, how fast can I, my boyfriend, pop off rapping, right? It's like, nobody's thinking about the planning of like that. So being 30, turning 39, it's interesting. Yeah, so it's interesting, but it's cool though. I feel like I'm having the time of my life though, in terms of like, when it comes to how I'm feeling with life.
I saw that you had posted, you were like, I'm 6 days in, and this is just beautiful.
Yeah.
What's something that you can point to, you know what I mean, at 39, that at 30 maybe, or even 35, let's say 35, a different perspective, something super transformative that's helped you?
Man, it's funny because you know how my personality is. I was on the phone talking to our booking agent, Calendar, and while I was talking to him, I was like, man, there's so many motherfuckers call me that don't got nothing to offer the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I was like, y'all owe Sean G an apology. Because I used to always say, man, Sean G only called me when he wants something. I called Sean G. I said, hey, man, I apologize. He said, what'd I do? I said, no, you didn't do anything. I said, man, 3 years ago, I was talking to Troy, and I was saying, like, you know, these old niggas, man, they don't be, you know, they only call when they need something. I said, but now, 4 years later, I appreciate the fact that when you call me, it's an opportunity. You know what I'm saying? It might not be the money I want, but it's an opportunity. And he was laughing the whole time, like, man, you crazy. I said, nah, man, but I'm serious because I have to be accountable to growth. You know what I'm saying? And at 30, that was, you know, I was way more rough around the edges than 35, right? But it still was like this same level of like, not getting support, so this chip on your shoulder that creates more issues for you behind closed doors that you don't even realize. So I thought it was really important that me call that black man and say, yo, man, I really appreciate you calling me because you always call to offer opportunity.
Sometimes we don't know what advocacy looks like.
We definitely don't.
Yeah.
we definitely don't.
I was just talking to an old mentor literally a week ago, and I literally had to do the same thing. I apologized. I told him, I said, I wanted to take the time to tell you when I was in your office, and listen to what I said. I was in your office and you were paying me a consultancy salary, whatever, you know. And every day your door was open for me to walk in.
100%.
And I remember screaming one day, like, you're not supporting me in the way that I want to be.
Yeah.
And he's like, what does advocacy look like to you?
Right.
And I had to go sit down and like think about it. So it's also important for us to like circle back. That's a dope thing that you did for Sean. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. We need to do more of that with each other. Just sometimes like circling back and be like, look, man, I was in this place at that time. I didn't have this understanding, this context. And now that I do, and I know that what you were offering me was something of substance and to help me, I appreciate it.
Yeah, because it's rare.
Quieting that pride to allow yourself to do that also too.
1,000%.
And also one thing I had to learn as I got older in my career, I always thought that transactional relationships were a bad thing.
Okay.
I always looked at it as a negative thing, like, oh, you're like, you're only calling me because you want something.
Okay.
But then you do realize, like, it's just how you frame it. It's how you it's the context you put it in.
Yep.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Because I'd rather somebody call me when they need something and they are intentional about what they need than somebody pretending to be my partner, my friend, my boy, I got you, but really the ulterior motives. And I think we have to get into that space of being like, it's okay if we ain't boys. We don't got to talk every day. Mm-hmm. But when we do talk, let's either get down to business or, you know, let's catch up, whatever it is. So I think how you frame everything is so important as you get older in your career, you know?
Yep.
Because then you're not turned off to things.
100%.
We were talking about it earlier about as you get older now, especially in the executive space and some of these other spaces, people tend to try to say you're archaic or you're a dinosaur. And a lot of it is because the pride of people who've been doing it for a long time won't allow them to dive into the TikTok generation or dive into like these things. Even if I'm not a fan of it, me as a marketeer, I have to understand what's going on.
You have to understand it.
I have to understand the climate of what's going on in the world or else I fall behind, you know? So, you know, again, and a lot of that for me was my pride. Like, I've been doing this so long. Mm-hmm. I've been at the beginning of this. I helped usher this in.
Mm-hmm.
But you only as good as your last hit. And that can be music. It could be a jump shot. It could be a marketing campaign.
Whatever,
you know what I mean? Whatever it is. So, you know, I think, you know, to you guys' point, we have to do a better job of advocating for each other, but not always in the lens we see it in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because advocacy could be in so many different forms.
In this business of music, a transactional relationship might be the most transparent relationship you have. Right? You don't like that, you like, because there's so many actors, right?
So many.
So somebody that you know for a shadow of a doubt, like, oh, we only do business. Mm-hmm. They only call me. That might be the most transparent relationship you have, and you don't even realize it, you know?
And it might be the most rewarding because, again, it doesn't come with all these layers. Like, I don't have to hold space for you to be like, hey, you coming by the house? You want to sit with the family? You know what I mean? Like, because you don't have to do all of that. You want to go to the game together? Nah, you're calling me because you want to route a tour. I need Brent on the tour. You know what I'm saying? I need Brent for this festival. I need, you know, I need Couture to do whatever. You know what I'm saying? Sponsor things, whatever. So, again, the transactional relationship may actually be the most transparent, but also the most rewarding, because what it does is it frees up the thing that we can't get back, time.
Yep.
I don't have to hold a space and time for you.
Yeah.
So that's a blessing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Clarity is very important.
Excuse me?
Clarity.
Clarity, yes.
That's another thing at 39 that I was like, I'm praying for more of that.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Because I think it helps with your mental health as well. When you have clarity on what it is and what it is and what it ain't gonna be, you don't live in a fairy tale world. So it helps you digest reality better.
Yeah.
You know, and make decisions.
1,000%.
And informs the decisions.
Clarity always gonna inform the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of like mental health and like all those things based around wellness, your series that you do, your wellness, how did that come about?
Man, so
tell us the name of it first.
So yeah, so the company is called Mirrors Wellness Club.
Okay.
And the concept of Mirrors Wellness Club is looking in the mirror and checking yourself, and then from there grow from your wellness, you know, and being serious about it. I play sports, so I've always been conscious of working out and wellness and all those different things. But the Wellness Club started because of NFTs. Right?
Okay.
So early November 2021, I was trying to convince my clients that they need to get into NFTs because of the fan reward. and the fan like build that you can do if you're really serious about it. Mm-hmm. Outside of the cryptocurrency and the blockchain technology and Web3, just the technology itself. So I was looking at it similar that I was looking at streaming in 2009. I was like, yo, this is gonna be something. It might take 10 years, but this is gonna be something. Mm. And I got frustrated because none of the artists would listen. So on my way to Jamaica to write the book, okay. I started sketching these drawings, which I haven't sketched drawings since I was like 11. And it hit me, I was like, man, I'm gonna do my own NFT collection. But I'm like, what the fuck I'm gonna do the collection on? Because I don't do stuff just to do it. And I was like, what's important? I'm asking myself these questions as I'm walking through Atlanta Airport, headed to my flight. And what popped up to me was wellness. Mind you, I had no clue that there was no NFT project that was centered around wellness.
Okay.
I just was like, that's what I'm gonna stand behind. I'm gonna stand behind wellness. So I started thinking about it, you know, the drawing I was doing, I was like, oh man, you know, I was drawing these dogs looking in the mirror.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm gonna call it Mirror Wellness Club, because in order to start being healthy, you gotta look at yourself. Self-reflection is the first step of any healing, yeah. Right? So I was like, Mirror Wellness Club, that's what I'm gonna call it. And it started from there. As I started learning about NFTs, as I started like learning about the technology, then I started learning about how many people that don't even really know about wellness, but they knew about Web3. So okay. I was like, oh, so we need to be like the hub for people that want to know about Web3 and they serious about wellness. They're the audience. The people that want to know about wellness and they're like early adapters with Web3, they're the audience. Mm. And it started being this thing where I wanted to create something that we know from the data that social media fucked up multiple generations. Mm. Now, with Web3, with virtual reality, with the metaverse, it's gonna do worse damage if we don't get in front of it. So Mirror's Wellness Club was my effort to be like, okay, I'm gonna do in real life events. We're gonna use the metaverse as a tent pole to be like, hey, remember, go outside, you know? Just think about if you in the metaverse and you walking through the metaverse, we may have a billboard up in the metaverse that'll say, hey, go walk your dog.
Yeah.
Hey, go ride a bike in real life.
Yeah.
And to be constantly reminding people that this ain't real. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like this is a figment of technology that's incredible and it's beneficial, but it's not real. And I think if we had that information before social media got here, it'd be less kids that are affected by bullying, that are affected by suicide and drug addiction because they are ashamed of, or they're like polarized by social media.
Polarized is the perfect term.
Yeah. You know, you're talking about like sketching and you're walking these things down in your mind. You identified, you know, these are the people that this is for. Do you feel like that art is lost and way harder now for artists now? Because you have TikTok, you have Instagram, you have Facebook, and it's really just like whatever clicks, but people don't really, I feel like it's harder to identify who your demographic is. You know what I mean? Like when people are making music, I don't feel like people are like, you know, I'm trying to speak for the kid who, you know, grew up like this, or I'm trying to reach this demographic. Do you feel like that's kind of lost these days?
I think that the hardest thing for any artist in any generation is to find their audience. Today, it's harder not because they can't find their audience. It's just people have multiple interests nowadays. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Just like genres are being bent because people now growing up listening to, on their playlist, there's rap, funk, country, alternative, all genres in one aspect. As we was growing up, you had to switch the CD player.
Yeah.
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Oh, you had to change the radio station or whatever the case may be. So I think now people are creatures of habitat. If I'm looking at you and you start doing something that I do, but you do it at a lower quality and you're being successful. The percentage of me trying to do it at a higher quality is gonna decrease because I'm seeing in front of me that you doing this shit at a low quality. I just wanna get the same results you're getting. I think that is what's happening because when you think about companies like Motown, you think about a lot of these, they were standing beside incredible talent.
Incredible.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. That ain't the case now. So the bar is not being rising because everybody's hustling versus people have purpose in their music, but everybody now is hustling.
Man, makes sense because it was like, people would go into the studios, the huge boards, the bands, the musicality, and now it's like, I could do this in the bedroom with just my laptop.
Cut my dope.
And there are some amazing artists that have been able to do that.
Exactly.
But like you said, when the frequency is like, oh, that's the bar now, I could step over that. I don't even got to jump.
Yeah, which is a huge hindrance to the overall arc. The lack of development, the lack of bodies of work. Like, we're getting, you know, in anything right now, we're getting too much. There's just too much. You know what I'm saying? Like, nothing is special. Like, you know, we're from the era where, you know, releases were special. Yeah. I remember when Kanye and 50 were about to battle to see who could, you know, yo, I'm gonna sell more records than you on this day. You know what I mean? It was on 106 and Park. They was gonna meet. Everybody was like, yo, somebody gonna end their career. It was like a real thing. Like, if you don't sell as many units as me, but also again, it's the overall purpose. That all comes from purpose. I don't think Kanye, I don't think 50 were saying it out of, there's a little vanity to it, but it was really like, nah, motherfucker, I stand on this music that I developed for like 9 months making. Yeah. Kanye, like, yo, I went to Hawaii and did all of this and brought everybody in. And, you know, 50 probably had, you know, Dre and High Tech and Denon Porter at the time and everybody, you know what I'm saying, in the kitchen cooking for him in New York, like whatever. And we don't, that right now is, I think it's just a microcosm, right, of everything. Like, I might sound like a hater, but I was watching the tournament, and I was just sharing with people. I'm like, yo, I'm sorry. I feel like the level of basketball that's being played right now is, I see a lot of athleticism. I see a lot of people that can jump out the gym. I see a lot of threes being hoisted, but I don't see no footwork. I don't see the team that won is because they got hot, not because it was a great team. And there's no other great teams.
De'Aaron Fox said the same thing.
There's no other great teams. It was just somebody got hot for like in a tournament setting. That's it. I don't believe that the best team won the national title. I don't even know how long it's been since the best team won or somebody caught fire in a tournament. And that's like, again, right? That's some life shit.
That year Baylor won, nobody would beat Baylor.
Okay, yeah.
There was grown men playing defense, playing sound basketball, but
listen to what you're saying, though. And it was all grown men, guys that had been in the program for a long time.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
They were developed.
Speaking of which, I'll give you another example. So my daughter plays, you know, club volleyball. So we're in Vegas. And there was a team out of Texas. Daughter plays in the 12, like, elite class. So there's these 12-year-old girls, and they're from, like, El Paso, Texas. And none of these girls had any height to them, couldn't spike the ball, anything, right? But they passed the ball very well. Uh-huh. They dug the well. And we asked the coach, we were like, yo, because they were really highly ranked. The other girls you saw, these other teams, like, my daughter's physicality, jumping out the gym, spiking the ball, da-da-da. These little girls from El Paso, Texas, we were like, what's the secret? He's like, oh, they've been playing together for like 5 years. They're also a softball team. So it was, you know what I'm saying? Like, this, the what was encouraged was long term. We might not win it this year. We not mm-hmm. might not win a year two, but by year three, y'all gonna have played together 3 years, mm-hmm. played in these tournaments, understand whatever, you know, the nuances, mm-hmm. understand what your teammate does well, mm-hmm. what his strengths is. We gonna be have let go all of the ego, mm-hmm. right? We're cool with subbing in and out. It was, and they were blowing everybody out.
Development.
They whooped everybody.
So that we're clear, just because people stepping on their dope, development and product is still winning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's still gonna win.
Yeah. Like, still.
Yeah, it's still gonna win. It doesn't matter just because you get successful today. We was talking about this because our approach to just developing artists mm-hmm. is just based on slow roll. A whole bunch of no's for a very long time until yeses are just like, you stupid if you don't say yes to this. It's so obvious that you don't say, you second guess yourself the opposite of the way. You're like, man, I probably should say yes to that. That's how long we wait before we start saying yeses to like the really developing artists. And through that process, I would literally watch artists get hot, disappear, get hot, disappear. Yeah, I watched for 7 years.
Yeah.
Get hot, disappear, get hot, disappear, get hot, disappear. And the ones that have staying power cut through when they do have the obligation. Like SZA is a talent. Mm-hmm. She's talented.
Yeah.
She would have survived because she writes her music. She would have survived a lot of different eras. How big she would have been is subject.
Yeah.
But she's a talent.
Yeah.
And that was a developed talent.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And it's going to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger because the foundation of it.
It's there
it's
now.
There.
It's there now.
It's there.
Same thing with Brent, though. Yeah. With you and Brent.
Oh. Oh. The long game, your ability to almost like foresee these things. You talked about the cusp of streaming 2009 and you being like, there's something there. It might take 10 years. What is that mentally that allows you to stay in that space to stay the course? Because you're known as...
You are the long game.
You're not only the long game, but just true to what you believe in, and you stick to your guns and you don't waver from that. Mentally, what keeps you in that space?
Everything for me changed when I realized I wanted to live till I was 80. You know what I'm saying? We try to get stuff so fast because we don't know where we're going to leave. Mm. We grow up as black men basically seeing everybody young die probably before. So you're not planning. So it's like, I got this thing that's hot. I need to cash it in now. It's like, yeah. I need my money now. I don't wanna think about it because it might not be hot then. Or it might not be valuable in 2 years. Or it might not be valuable in 4 years. That simple click of like, man, I wanna live till I'm 80. What does life look like when I'm 80? I ain't trying to be fucked up though. I'm not trying to be broke when I'm 80.
Yeah.
So if I'm taking, if I'm with people or with artists and they want to take their time, I'm not tripping because I know what comes on the back end if you take your time. Mm. That development is, it's
crucial.
It's so crucial.
Yeah.
And when it's there, it's very hard to like take it away. It's very hard to take it away.
Is that what kind of what pushed you to the book? What,
yeah.
What stirred in you to want to write the book? Because I've known you for a few years, but you've always been operating in the back, in the shadows,
yeah.
and, you know, writing the book. And now, you know, even sitting down with us and some of these other, you know, interviews and things that you're doing, what brought that upon? What was this, the calling or the stirring in your heart?
It was the 39 was coming. He was like, this is just a part of it.
I want to give all the information away, right?
Okay.
That's the core of it. Mm-hmm. I want to give all the information away. And I wanted to do it before I was, quote unquote, successful. Mm. Because when you're writing a book from where you're at or where you've experienced and you haven't seen that level of success yet, the person that's reading it is gonna read it from that place in their life. Like, I wasn't Diddy writing the book. Not to say that Diddy couldn't write a book right now.
Yeah, yeah.
But it didn't, so a person reading it, they might walk past me at the mall, you know? And so it feels accessible. Mm. It feels attainable. And the way that I'm writing it from a standpoint of, this is what we did. It might work for you, it might not work for you. It might work for you, it might do. Conceptually, these are methods that you can actually do. But here is the story on how we did it. But this is the concept that you should probably use, and it's a step-to-step, step-by-step way. And I just think that the information that I have been getting over the last past decade through being a boutique business, you know, it's important for people to know that they can do it, but you have to start small. Mm. You have to start from your foundational building. I remember speaking to this like these young white kids, A&R. Really dope A&R, has really good ear. And he was hounding me. Like when I say hounding me, hounding me.
I know who this is.
And I think we was either in Dallas, or it was one of the shows where I think you was on.
We was in Dallas
and
or Houston.
I remember this. I was sitting on the tour bus and I was looking out the window, and for some reason, I think he was either on the phone with me, but he might have been in front of me, but I think he was on the phone.
He was on the phone.
And he was just like, man, why are you doing all this work? Why don't you just partner with a label and let them go deal with Australia? I said, if I partner with the label and let them go deal with Australia, I don't learn. And where I'm sitting at as a black man, I can't afford not to learn, because if I want to grow wealth, I got to pass information. You know what I'm saying? I said, so if I got to go to every fucking country myself to learn so that I can solely come back and be like, this is what I learned. You got to do it this way. This is how their system works. I'd rather do that, because then I'm going to learn, and then there ain't nobody going to be able to like tell me that this ain't the right way or take something away from me. You know what I'm saying? From
or have you move out of fear.
Exactly.
Because you don't know.
Exactly.
There's that blind spot.
The blind spot is very important.
Yeah, yeah.
So for me, I'm like, man, I talk a lot of shit, man. I need to learn, because motherfuckers ain't going to fuck with me because I've been saying some shit they ain't like. So I need to weapon myself with information.
Yeah.
I'm going to get the experience, because I'm going to go out and be humble about it and get people's coffee. I don't care about none of that, but I care about the information. So the Culture Playbook was a brainchild between the article that went viral back in the day with me and Yo, and we just kept that conversation going. And I was like, man, we need to make it like a playbook where a person can open it up, any chapter, and say, I'm gonna try this today. I'm gonna try this tomorrow, you know? And the concepts in it, I think, is gonna live for a long time, because I don't think we ever thought about, we do bad deals because we got financial trauma. In a black community, our first transaction was check cashing or payday loans or all these different terrible.
Yes.
These things are out. These are things are illegal in all of the states where they have a high capital of wealth.
Yeah.
Like payday loans, these places are illegal.
Yeah.
You can't even have them in certain states.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. It's illegal. But then you take a Jewish community who got the, you know, the Jewish loans that are interest-free loans for anybody that's Jewish, and all thing they got to do is be Jewish and pay the money back, interest-free. That's their first introduction to loans and finances and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So in my mind, as I'm writing the book and I'm reading the Jewish phenomenon while I'm writing it, I'm like, is there a alignment with the reason that we take bullshit deals? Mm. Is because we are introduced to bullshit deals in the hood.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Then it starts having people think about like, oh, so if I never get introduced to a bad deal, I'm more likely to fight for something that's good for myself.
Wow.
And then it kind of like hopefully can train brains that work in the music space to not only be more agile about their business, but to understand what kind of financial trauma that you probably experienced growing up or your mama experienced, and it rubbed off on you because, you know, you pawned the title to your car.
Yeah. And the interest rate is 27% on, but as both of you guys execs in the music business for a long time, one, are you still like perplexed that these kids are still putting themselves in these bad deals, because the wealth of knowledge that's out there about these bad deals, and you can, I mean, there's an artist every year from old to new that are like, F the label, I got in a bad deal. And two, how do we, the education is there. How do we get artists and these people to start taking this knowledge and actually, you know, putting it into practice?
I blame the lawyers.
Yeah.
Every last thing, every bad deal an artist signed, the lawyer fault. The lawyers got the information. I'm sitting, artists today have lawyers that will sign their rights off. Now the artist might be gung-ho about getting the advance, like, I want to get the money, right?
But if they were really educated on what's on the other side of it, not only is it the lawyers, and we're not just talking about music, we're talking about in all mediums, you know what I'm saying? NIL shit going on now, you know? Terrible lawyers, terrible people in the mix. It's the Wild Wild West. There's a reason why it's being allowed to move in the fashion that it is right now, because then there's going to be someone else of another complexion, yep, that's going to come in to a family or families. You know, we know sports, NFL specifically is what, nearly 80% black?
Yeah.
Okay? But there's going to be someone from outside of your structure that's going to be the voice of reason. Mm-hmm. So let's let them run wild right now. Let's let certain things happen, so then I can come in and say, hey man, listen, I know your guy over there means well, or your father means well, or blah 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 blah, but you know, we need to take it from here, or you're gonna be in trouble. You know what I mean? And we've seen it over and over again. So there's a reason why these things are allowed to happen.
Now, I don't think that black business owners or black executives or black managers or black lawyers understand that when you get an opportunity to support the business of a black athlete or a high-profile black artist, if you fuck that up, you just fucked it up for 5 or 6 or 10 different opportunities for people that didn't even know that they wanted to be an agent or wanted to be a financial advisor, because now they're gonna look at black as wrong. The white folks, you're gonna rarely know that they fucked up, because they're so ahead of you with the information. We don't understand the type of pressure that we have to do good business, mm-hmm, with each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how that can be like, man, I should have went on and just did it with the white lawyer or the Jewish lawyer, because you didn't do a good job. Yeah. And I'm putting more pressure on you to do a good job,
yeah,
because you look like me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it can feel unfair, but that's the reality of it until it's not.
Yeah. Until it's not.
That's true. We even hold, like you said, each other to a different standard. And we're almost like looking like, is he gonna do nigga business, you know? But, you know, I feel like it's, you know, sometimes very neglectful. I know there's, you know, so many platforms, you know, whether it's podcasts or, you know, YouTube channels or news, that the focus is so much on the rah-rah, when I feel like if we can just figure out a way to, you know, again, like, disseminate some of this more information, that might not be exciting. It might not be exciting until you're the one on the other end going like, damn, I'm in a messed up deal now. I wish I would have took more stock in learning about this and learning about that. You know, I just find it interesting. And even what, you know, you were talking about the lawyer, like Lamar Jackson is now in a position, they may change how the CBA and contracts are, because how hard he's going, he wants all his money up guaranteed. It's never happened in the NFL, but he's standing on that. Mm-hmm. you know, and he hasn't allowed anybody to shake him down, you know, to change his perspective on that. And I think he can be a great pillar to show, like, you're only good as what you negotiate, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, I think, yeah, the Lamar situation, because I want to get back to something to do with you, but in Lamar's situation, I think it's going to be what we've seen in the past. It's going to be very difficult because Lamar is fighting a couple of enemies, whether he is aware of it or not. Not only is he fighting the NFL owners, but he's fighting the agents. Agents can't support him because if he does this deal, if he's able to get this deal for that amount of money, right, guaranteed, then it puts the agents in jeopardy. They shouldn't look at it like that. They should look at it like, yo, he's educating himself. I can still help him educate himself. There are still other nuances to making a deal, but that's not how it's perceived. So there's fear.
Yep.
So that's why you see this guy is 2 years from being a league MVP. This guy's only gotten hurt in the pocket. He's never been hurt running. These are facts. Mm-hmm. He's never been hurt outside of the pocket.
No.
His injuries have come actually trying to be a pocket passer. So with that being said, like, we've seen it before. There's collusion. You know, that's it. Period, point blank. And we're always facing those things. Again, it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, the goalposts move for us, man. Yeah. Okay. Even when, you know, the dude, like, what have you? He's an exemplary guy too.
Yeah.
Like, it, from a character standpoint, all you hear is like, "Yo, he's a great guy in the locker room and this and that. He's been great to Louisville." You don't hear anything about him in the off season. I haven't heard about him in a club with a gun. No disrespect. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, dude is living his life. So, for that also, he should get what he feels he should get. I think there's, you know, that's where it is. But he's fighting an uphill battle, man. And again, we find ourselves in these situations because we're not unified. Because if the player is unified, fuck them union people, because they not for you. They in the pockets of the owners anyway. If the players unified, and just off of sheer numbers, like, yo, you're not doing that. We're not going for that. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's in anything, right? Sheer mm-hmm. numbers. Like, if we want things to change in music, we just like, you, Barry, me, whoever, you know, everybody, whatever, managers, everybody gets together, Troy, whoever, right? And just sits down and just has a real conversation minus the ego and say, what's better for the overarching trajectory of us. And that's our problem. We don't sit in that space.
Well, when we do, we don't put no actionable items behind it. It's great to sit down and have the brunches and the lunches, but
it's easy to disrupt mobility versus when civil rights was happening. There was no other options.
Yeah.
Either you boycott this bus or you can't go back to the community that you live in, right?
Yeah.
Now, you know, there's so many distractions for unity. Monetary distraction, resource distractions, whatever the case may be. So people are not going to, it happens all the time with me. Just, I negotiate a deal on the touring side and my mans that I know gonna do a good job for this show, I gotta fight for them to get the show over Live Nation. Not because Live Nation is a bad company. I'm like, it's a black man. He's gonna do the exact same job Live Nation is gonna do. But there's three people calling me, trying to convince me that Live Nation is better. Once again, I'm not saying that Live Nation isn't better or is better. I'm just saying that this black man has done great business already. I'm gonna go with him. You know what I'm saying? And because that's what the Jewish man would do,
mm-hmm.
right? Or the Hispanic man. Like, it's a trend culturally that they figure out how to support one another.
Yeah.
And so but it's always more money. Man, I just give you more money just to do it with me.
Yeah.
And then that's when this whole unity thing goes to shit.
Goes out the window.
Now it's like, man, I gotta get my money.
Yeah.
And it's just like, how much more money do you need, you know, that will justify not
fucking
being united?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
The justification of not being united is one of the the shit that we see so much of, you know what I mean? But listen, speaking of like united and just speaking of advocacy, support, you, we were talking about this earlier. You, first I saw that Lost Kids, Brent, yourself have a grant out. Mm-hmm. Speak on the
show
grant.
Show you off grant.
Show you, yeah.
So basically, it was a record Brent did like in 2007. Maybe like 2016, 2017. And it was called Betting on the Muse. And it was a song. I was like, man, this song is incredible. The name is incredible, whatever. But through the process of the song getting done, the name got changed to Show You Off. And the song was about the influence of all the black women in his life. And it was a, like, we did like a, almost like a short film style music video for it. One of the marketing pieces was this grant that I was like, yo, we're gonna do a Show You Off grant. And we're gonna identify five black women that started a business and we're gonna grant $10,000. So it started off as a marketing tool to promote this song that he was putting out to doing International Women's Month to honor all of the black women. And then the visual had like all his aunts and his mom and all these different things. It was shot by a black director, a female director. So from that seed, the grant was birthed. And from there, we've just been carrying it on ever since, every International Women's Month. And so the grant is meant to basically say, you don't have to have a degree. You don't have to, you know, have experience on starting a business. You don't even got to have, somewhere to stay, you know what I'm saying? But if you can record a 1 minute video just telling us about your idea of a business that you have or a business you want to start, you have an opportunity to get the grant. And so that's kind of like how it started. And it's an annual thing that we do. And this year we just picked the winners, 10 women, 10 grand each. So they're, you know, they're literally in the process of getting all that. And this year it's more built out now, because before it was just like, here go the money. And then we're back working on other things. But my partner Jane wanted it to be more supportive after the fact. Mm-hmm. So now they have like mentorship that they get quarterly from anybody that's in culture's ecosystem. They get invited to anything that we're doing that can kind of help them with their business or things of that nature. It's like a check-in aspect of it. And mm-hmm. then they become a part of like this alumni. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to figure out how to incorporate all of the grant winners, which is three, this is the third class. So it's three classes of it, and figuring out how to incorporate them. Maybe like at year five, we do like a annual, like a 5-year, you know, kind of, revamp or revisit of all the grant winners and see where they're at with their businesses, or if they started new businesses. Because the truth of the matter is, the grant is just for the entrepreneur spirit.
Yeah.
What you might start today might not even be it. It might be one of four.
Yeah.
But the fourth one might be it. But that initial seed gave you that empowerment, gave you that confidence to be able to say, you know what, I can do this. Like, somebody believe in me, because I didn't even have a business plan. Yeah. I just told them about this idea. And hopefully it sparked like a certain level of drive. So my thinking about supporting black women wasn't more so just like, oh, my mom's black. You know what I'm saying? It was more like, man, my mom worked hard. Mm. Like, I watched my mom work 12-hour swinging shifts. You know what I'm saying? I watched that. I watched her work 2 and 3 jobs for me and my brother. So what happens if that same level of work ethic, those 12 hours you give into this company, what happens if you have a seed or you have infrastructure, you have a support system that encourage you to go out on your own and put those 12 hours somewhere where your family can benefit a lot more?
Down the road.
And so that is like my thinking when it comes to black women. It's like, yo, if you work hard and you got resources and you get opportunity, this $10,000 grant, it ain't life-changing, but it could be life-changing.
It could be.
That's you know smart. What I'm saying? Like, it could be life-changing. Not the money amount, it's the actual intention behind it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's the seed.
Somebody
that's being
bet sold, on me.
Right?
Yeah. Somebody bet on me.
And so that can be enough courage and enough confidence to fuel a whole city. From a woman to spread and build up another team of entrepreneurs that look like her, that don't look like her, but they all got the same mission. And so everything that it's kind of like a trickle down effect. So that is just from a work perspective and a business perspective. But then from a mental health perspective, with Mirrors Wellness Club, we started doing this all women's retreat last year.
You just went with St. Martin?
It was St. Martin.
Yeah.
And the concept of it was we wanted to do like vacation scholarships, right? And it was solely based around wellness. And so I was getting, you know, feedback from other women that's traveled with groups. Because, you know, a lot of women want to travel, but they don't always have somebody to travel with. Yeah. So people join these travel clubs. And I would always ask, like, so what do you like about the travel club? What you don't like about the travel club? And one of the consistent gripes about it is that it's too busy. I don't feel like I'm on vacation, right? Mm-hmm. So what we did was we invited 15 women throughout the entertainment and sports and just entertainment and media business in general. We invited 10 women to bring them and their plus one. And all they have to pay for is their travel to the destination. Once they get there, everything is paid for, from the excursions to all those different things. But for the
hotel too?
Everything.
Okay, okay.
So the 4 nights, the itinerary every day is based on wellness. So day one might be a welcome dinner, yoga. Then you go do whatever you want to do. Day two, it might be a sunset cruise that start at 7. So you got the whole front half of the day to do whatever you want to do. And what I've noticed is all of these women, they started to talk to each other, communicate to one another. It's almost like a golf course for women.
Yeah.
And they're okay. able to build these relationships. So now, women that was at that retreat, they're finding ways to work with one another after the retreat without interference of penises. You know what I'm saying? And so this year, we're building out this year, so it's going to be 17 women that get invited, and they're inviting their plus ones, and we're still working out the details of where city is going to do, but we focus on like the Caribbeans, because they just feel like wellness, you know what I'm saying? And it's really, really designed, and what we realized through like the surveying and all those different things was about 65% of the women that was there hadn't been on a vacation in like 5 years.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
And so it was a mother who she just gave birth like a year ago. And she was like, man, this is such a refreshing thing to me. And she was in between careers. Like she was in publishing, trying to figure out like, okay, what is the next thing that she was gonna do? And it was women last year that is getting invites this year that couldn't come because they was newly mothers, you know what I'm saying? They had newborns and they just wasn't comfortable leaving their child at that particular point. So now this year, they're like, I'm ready this year. I think I deserve it, right?
Reset, recharge.
Reset.
What's whether it's a quote or something you really stand on, like just some word, you know, a little word of wisdom, you know, for the people out there. You know, everybody loves affirmations and those things, but what are some things that you actively do every day, whether it's prayer, whether it's you got a whiteboard with quotes or, you know, what's something like that that you...
One of the things that I've been doing since 2011 is that I pray in past tense, right? So my prayers, and it pops up daily on my phone app at 4 o'clock every day. I pray for the things that I already achieved, even if I haven't achieved them. So my prayers are based on solely gratitude. So when you read my, so if you read my prayer, you read it as if it already happened. And I'm being thankful for it. And I think people, I think a lot of people don't know how to pray, right? Because it's almost like I want to pray and I want it to instantly happen, right? Versus the gratitude of getting blessings and being thankful for the blessing that you already received. That's the most powerful prayer. And so for me, that's something that I do, like literally it pops up every day at 4 o'clock. And it's been like that since 2011. And I update my goals and things I want to achieve holistically the 12th of December every year. So I've already surpassed all my personal financial income goals for my prayer for 2023, the first quarter. And it's so ingrained into my mind now because every year for the last past 12 years, I've been doing it. So now it's like, I look, I'm like, oh shit. Like it kind of threw me off a little bit when I looked at it the other day and I was like, oh shit, it's only March. You know what I'm saying? So I'm always about just like gratitude.
Beautiful.
Saying thank you. I don't think enough people say thank you, man. That's like something that I'll leave with everybody. Like, say thank you.
Yeah. you know what I'm saying? Nah, man, we're grateful you came and sat with us, man. I've always just admired your work from afar, and you know, it's just dope to be able to sit down. You know, it's refreshing. It's important. You know what I mean? So I'm very steeped in gratitude. You know, for these moments. And just excited to continue to learn from you too. And it's also amazing to surround yourself from people that you can learn from.
1,000%.
And that are always pushing the boundaries too, so.
1,000%. And I appreciate what you guys are doing with, you know, combining sports, music, and wellness, you know, is important because the pandemic technically is, you know, fizzling out, right?
Yeah.
But there, over the next 2 decades, I would say, there's going to be a big spike in people being more conscious about their wellness. Mm-hmm. So anything that's connected to wellness is going to see growth. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's important what you all are doing and finding the uniqueness on bringing all of those topics together. And it's gonna pay off in a way that I don't really think y'all really truly understand right now, because anybody that's investing into wellness today, it's a large potential to impact a lot of people in different ways, and it's needed, like greatly needed. You know what I'm saying?
Appreciate it. Appreciate the support, bro. Appreciate the support. Wait, before he goes, no. So he was in Houston the other night. I called him. I think I was calling you about being on the show.
Yeah.
And he was like, because I saw on IG, he was in Houston. He was like, yo, anybody in Houston got an extra pair of tickets for the Final Four? So then I was calling him about being on the show. And then we were talking about, or I asked him about who do you think was going to win, San Diego State, UConn. He was like, yo, bro, them dudes got like 2-3 guys in the post. You know what I mean? He was breaking it down because at first I had a little bit of hope. And then once he said what he needed to say, the reality set in, the sobering reality was like, yo, they about to get run off the court. Golly. They about to get whopped. You know what I'm saying? Your love of sports, man. He loves sports like I love sports, like really loves the competitiveness of it. And I know you're beginning to, and hopefully we can have you on a later show to talk about that, how you're sort of stepping into some of these spaces and everything. But in terms of sports right now for you, like, is there something on the calendar that's coming up? I don't know, NBA championship, I don't know, boxing, anything, an event that's got you like, yeah.
Oh yeah, Tank Davis and Ryan Garcia.
Woo! I knew it. Yeah. I knew it. Yeah. I wanted to make, but I knew it.
Yeah, that's gonna be a fight. Yeah, that's going to be a very, very interesting fight.
What you think? Let's talk about this real quick, because I got some. So, what you think?
So, I'm a betting man.
Okay.
So, okay. I want to bet against Tank Davis so bad.
Okay.
But he's just too mad. He's too angry, and he's so early in his career, and his skill set on how he sees boxing, it's very hard for me to think that he's going to lose. You know what I'm saying?
What you saying? I agree. I think people underestimate his skill of boxing because they the power, right? Mm-hmm. You see the power. And they're always like, oh, if it goes late, every single fight, if it goes late rounds, he can't survive. If you notice, I mean, he's knocked people out early, but he's also had some kind of late round knockouts, and he's a smart boxer.
Yeah.
He doesn't he's like that Floyd Mayweather school, like he doesn't exude a lot of energy, you know what I mean? Defensive, he's fast, and he got the power on top of that. And he just has something to prove. I feel like he just has that chip still, but not into the way where he makes mistakes.
I am a huge, huge, huge fan of the squared circle. Have been for a very, very long time. I love Tank. Tank and Bud are my favorite fighters. Mm-hmm. Because they fight with desperation.
Yes.
But they also fight with acute skill. Mm-hmm. They're very skilled. I love Tank. Ryan's going to give him some problems. The problems that Ryan presents are the length. Ryan does not fight short.
Jab.
Yeah, Santa Cruz fought short. Mm-hmm. So I told the homie, you remember?
Yeah.
I said, he going to sleep him. And I told him the round. I said, he going to sleep him. It's going to be six, and it's going to be with an uppercut. I literally, it's on a text. Me, him, and what, Jalen? We all. I was like, he going to sleep him.
He didn't want to come back out.
He wanted, it was nothing. Ryan presents a problem if he does what he does, which is if he stays on the end of the jab. If he stays on the end of the jab and he circles and he's really patient like he's saying he's going to be, then we're going to have Tank's going to have to do something that we've never seen Tank do.
Dig into his toolbox.
To stop him. That's the only thing. Ryan just, and I'm not a fuck, I want Tank to just knock him into fucking. But the other thing is that people aren't looking at is that Ryan has someone in his corner who's been in this moment, this almost exact moment. Mm-hmm. And that's Oscar De La Hoya when he was fighting Floyd Mayweather. Mm-hmm. And Oscar De La Hoya, you can look at tapes now, he says it. If I would have stayed on the fucking end of that jab, I was controlling the fight. Shorter than me, I fought short, I got in trouble, mm-hmm. I let my ego and stuff take. If Ryan Garcia, this is the thing though, if Ryan Garcia makes it a firefight at any time, he going to sleep.
But
if he stay, Tank going to have to do something that we haven't seen Tank do. He's going to make Tank dig down deep.
I think a body shot gonna
You think a body shot
gonna body shot gonna change. I think the body shot gonna change. Yeah, I think
Tank, but he gotta get close.
I think that it's gonna be very hard for any boxer to go 8-9 rounds and not get close. Mm-hmm. Especially when you're dealing with aggression.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
You get tired naturally, and when you get tired, the distance.
Yeah, listen, I totally agree. I just feel, and again, let's be very clear.
Oh, yeah.
I love Tank Davis. I expect Tank Davis to win the fight. But what I'm telling you is on April 22nd, it's going to be dramatic.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely going to be.
It's going to be dramatic.
It's going to be an incredible fight. And literally, I'm just a betting man. I'm like, boy, if you just put
right in the odds,
put a couple of grand on that, that's straight, just you go, Brian gonna win. Cause ain't nobody gonna, it's gonna be a, it's gonna be hard for, to convince anybody that, that Tank Davis is not gonna win that fight.
Before we get out of here, where can our peoples check more book. About all the things you have going on? Get
oh,
the
yeah.
book,
CulturePlaybook.com. That's the website. I mean, that can direct you to wherever that you need to go. But the book is probably the most impactful thing I've done because it's free information that is applicable to anybody in any walk of their business journey and personal journey, depending on, you know, how personal you are with your business. You know what I'm saying?
Love it.
But yeah.
Love it.
Appreciate you, bro.
How you doing, my brother?
Appreciate you. Appreciate you. Appreciate you.
Sweet Life, Dream Hotel Hollywood, esteemed guest Worldwide Ty, Malik Rashid, Chief Johnson. Make sure you tap in, and we'll see y'all soon.